Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in the ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
It's Nick Bolte. Where's my Indian? Well, I want you to deliver right now with every driver at your disposal. This is not a restaurant. This is a goddamn takeaway.
On today's episode, we will be talking about The Whale. This is a 2022 film directed by Darren Aronofsky and stars Brendan Fraser, Sadie Sink and Ty Simpkins. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A reclusive, morbidly obese English teacher attempts to reconnect with his estranged teenage daughter. Here is an original song to support the synopsis. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. Here he come again, I'm his only friend. He is struggling cause he thinks his tummy rumbling. It's demeaning what he's feeling. This poor fucker's gonna fall through the ceiling. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. Maybe one more snack for food whore. Another call to the motherfucking pizza store. Cheese, butter, sandwich, another. Fries, pizza, salami, blubber. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. Here he come again, cheese for my friend. Time is limited, I will be with him till the end. Time be ticking, it is sickening. I'm a fridge that be with him through the thick and thin. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. One snack, two snack, three snack, four. This poor fucker's gonna fall to the floor. Yo, remember kiddies, eat your veggies and exercise. Put down the fried chicken, pick up the broccoli. It's gonna be alright. It's gonna be alright. Let's start with some facts about the film. Following its debut screening at the Venice Film Festival, both the movie and lead actor Brendan Fraser were given a 6-minute standing ovation, a moment caught on camera that brought Fraser to tears. Longtime fans and critics alike have called The Whale a revival of Fraser's career after many years of absence from the screen.
Mm.
Deserved of 6-minute ovation?
It was humbling to see that, wasn't it?
Mm.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I hadn't seen him for so long that when I first saw a viral clip of Fraser in The Whale, I thought, no, oh my God.
Yeah.
I thought he's proper let himself go.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually him. Because
you
always heard rumours that he's just, for some reason, he just stopped acting, things all went wrong.
Yeah.
And then obviously, thank God, someone pointed out, no, that's a fat suit, he's not that big.
Yeah.
But he's not that big by a mile.
Yeah, you could fit maybe three Brendan Fraser's into his character Charlie.
I grew up loving Fraser, so it was wonderful to see that acceptance of him at Venice Film Festival, because I grew up loving The Mummy, School Ties, Tarzan, King of the Jungle.
King of the Jungle, yeah, classic.
I always liked Fraser.
Yeah.
He's a cool dude. Yeah, and it was lovely to see. And this is easily his hardest film he's ever done.
Oh, without a doubt.
Easy. I mean, he played an excellent role in School Ties where he's struggling. He can't succeed because he's Jewish. Even though he's the most talented footballer and he's been brought into this prestigious school to play American football on a scholarship.
Yeah.
And he gets bullied for being a Jew. So it's amazing, like, to see him go back to them sort of films. After watching it, I agree he does deserve a standing ovation for it. It's a taxing role.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I know him, like you say, from my childhood in these sort of action roles or comedy roles, and only really seen him, like, flex his dramatic chops in that episode of Scrubs.
I don't know if you remember. He's the photographer, isn't he?
Yeah. And
Smokes?
He ends up being dead, and he's a dear friend of Dr. Cox.
Oh, no, he doesn't smoke. I'm thinking of someone else.
Yeah, and that's the first time I really saw him being dramatic, and I took notice. And like you, he sort of, like the fact says, he'd sort of sunk into obscurity, and I'd seen nothing of him. I saw him voice a character in Doom Patrol, and I saw a few pictures of him out and about, and I did think the same. He was, you know, Action Man back in the day, wasn't he? Always yeah. looked really in great shape, mm-hmm. and middle-aged, and the struggles that he's gone through made him put on a bit of timber, and there's nothing wrong with that. But to see him turn out a performance like this, I didn't know he had it in him.
No.
And I think he's fully deserving of that ovation. And I've seen the clip, him getting emotional. There's no ounce of me that think he's playing up to the camera. You can tell he feels that. You can tell he feels like humbled and honoured and appreciative of getting this role. And yeah, it's lovely to see, because he seems like a genuinely nice dude. He strikes me as the sort of guy that's got his head screwed on, and even through adversity, through difficult times, he's rised like a phoenix and has produced a really amazing performance. Yeah, so hopefully, yeah,
absolutely,
he runs the right course. Charlie is loosely based on author Samuel D. Hunter, who wrote this movie adaptation. Like Charlie, Hunter is openly gay, taught expository writing at Rutgers University, and battled binge eating disorder. Hunter noted that before he lost almost 130 pounds, checkout girls would barely make an effort to act kindly to him, and people would yell abuse at him on the street. Okay, so you'd be yelling abuse?
No, never. Is he saying it hurt his feelings?
Well, I think he lost almost 130 pounds. That's almost a full person.
So did that help, do you think? Do you think the... But you know, you shouldn't be cruel to anyone for no matter what, but do you think people shouting out names and picking on him and not treating him like a human being helped him lose weight?
I think so.
It equally could have helped him kill himself, because yeah, you don't know who's what way the pendulum swings.
Exactly that, yeah. And I think there's something to be said, like, bullying's awful, of course it is. Whatever you're being picked on, bullied for, it's a tragedy. People shouldn't have to live through their life getting picked on by people, by how they look or who they are, any of that. It's horrible. But mm-hmm. I think there must be an element. As someone who used to be fat, I used to get picked on for my weight and stuff. If people didn't pick on me for it, I don't think I would have lost weight, because I love my food. I still love my food. And I had a very awful relationship with food when I was younger, that I was addicted to it. Instead of going out and kicking a ball around or going out on a bike, I'd eat food. And I found comfort in it.
It was one-sided, wasn't it? The burger wouldn't take you out for a date.
Exactly.
Pizza wouldn't hold your hand or massage your back. You were doing it all for them.
And I've asked, and they never reciprocated.
They didn't partake. You heard of John Brower Minnock?
I've not heard of John Brower Minnock. No.
So I thought, this guy was an American man who was the heaviest recorded human in history, weighing approximately 1,400 pounds, 100 stone.
A 100 stone man.
100 stone. 1941, died in 1983. He was born in 1941. And do you know what's amazing about him? When he finally went to the hospital, he also has the world record for losing more weight than anyone on earth. He lost 60 stone. They let him out and he put it all back on and died.
What a roller coaster of a story.
I just wanted to, because I think Fraser's character's 400-600 pounds. Although they're saying he's a 600-pound man.
He's a big lad.
400 to 600, yeah. So I thought, oh, who the heaviest? And it was an American guy, yeah, called John Brower Minnock.
So he was morbidly obese.
Well, he weighed about 2 sea lions or a polar bear.
Polar bears are heavy, they're beasts.
Big boys.
Yeah, they are big boys, yeah.
Big boys.
I retract that statement, they are big boys.
A land mammal, mate.
Yeah. No, that's... So he lost all the weight with help from medical professionals.
Yeah.
They let him back into
the... They
put
him on a 600 calorie a day diet.
Wow. And then they let him back into the wild and he ate himself to death.
Yeah, he just... Oh. Yeah. Because he didn't have to catch a gazelle by chasing it.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a gazelle got brought to him by a delivery guy. It just never ended.
Never ended, man. That gazelle topped with cheese and pepperoni.
I wonder how the guy who wrote the play?
Samuel D. Hunter.
Oh, okay, so, and he is gay, he is overweight, or was overweight.
Yeah, and he taught expository writing.
See, it's his story.
Yeah, he's pulled from real life situations, real experiences that he went through.
Well, so we should respect and appreciate whether he supports Fraser being the guy casted for this. And I agree. I just look at that and I say that's good enough for me.
I think so. If it's if it comes from real experience, if it's your own personal story, you should be having a say on who plays that role.
Hmm.
And if he's cool with Fraser, then I'm cool with Fraser. Hmm. And listen, like we said, first fact, he's not been in the limelight for so many years. He comes out and bangs out a performance like this. Huge credit goes to the casting team. I think Darren Aronofsky was connected to the project for a while, couldn't figure out who was going to be his leading man.
Yeah, and 7-8 years.
Yeah, then saw Brendan Fraser and was like, he can do it. And I think he got it right. Early doors, I think he's fully deserving of the Oscar.
See.
And one of the greatest, most gut-wrenching performances I've seen in a long, long while.
Yeah. So, it'd be hard to not have given that an Oscar.
No, they couldn't have.
It's too unique. You don't see... obesity as the lead man ever really do.
No.
And if it was, it was John Candy and it was a comedy, or Chris Farley.
And certainly obesity to this scale. You know, you've seen larger guys like recently Paul Walter Hauser. He's making a good career for himself as an established actor.
Oh, he's a good old cuddly teddy bear. Yeah, I like that guy.
Great at what he does, but he's not the size of Charlie, Brendan Fraser's character in this, is he? Mm-mm. So, final fact, The Whale is shot in a 4:3 aspect ratio, giving us a confined, boxy atmosphere that mirrors the confines of Charlie's apartment.
Similar to Lighthouse.
Yeah.
I think that was along them lines.
I enjoyed that, the scale of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually one of my main likes of the film.
It's squared off, isn't it? It made a Fraser appear longer than wider, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll jump on that fact with what one of the things I liked about it, and then we'll go on to yours.
Sneak.
But the decision to use that ratio, I feel like it presents the film on a smaller scale, and that's a smart move, because Aronofsky's decision to use this frame size made everything feel more claustrophobic. And I don't know about you, but it gave me like a sense of how it must feel to be trapped in a confined space with no option of leaving.
Oh.
So it's smart filmmaking that gives the audience a chance to relate to a man who likely feels so alien to the vast majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're looking at a character that is banging out like a week's worth of food in a day because he's addicted to food. He's obsessed with food. That's his one comfort. That's the one thing that he enjoys, and he's got himself into such a sorry state of being at home and gorging himself.
Mm.
Most of us can't relate to that. So putting the audience in a position where everything on the screen feels so much more tighter and compact, yeah, it worked for me.
That's great. Good point.
So what things did you like about The Whale? I think it's worth saying now, you did struggle a little with this one, didn't you?
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
I've never had a weak stomach. This film made me feel physically ill more than once. I couldn't finish it in one sitting. That's what he said.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I've struggled with it. But in terms of like attention to detail, his laptop covered in morsels and fingerprints of a pudding-based texture, and I appreciate that sort of directing.
Okay.
Because there's no chance his hand was ever clean and lemony.
No.
Unless that lemon came from a kebab.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking at how grubby that laptop was.
Sticky mitts.
Oh, everything's so filth. Apart from the room that he keeps pristine, where him and his boyfriend, a dead ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
And he just keeps that pristine because that's the one part of him. He's like compartmentalized the memory and manifested it into a room.
That's the only aspect of his life he still respects, is the shrine to his dead partner.
Oh, sorry.
No, listen, I'll get on to it when we go on to dislikes. This isn't an easy watch. I think anyone looking for a fun time, you want to look elsewhere.
That's because you want to help. It's like Flight. You want to jump in and say, you don't need the drink.
Yeah.
You don't need the food, please. As an audience member, it's hard to watch someone slowly kill themselves intentionally.
Yeah.
It's different when it's an overweight person who refuses to believe they're overweight and that they will live.
Yeah.
Because NHS or a medical care system will jump in and give them, what's the bag thing that restricts their stomach? I can't remember. Gastro band or whatever it's called.
That's it.
Yeah. They always think, oh, it'll be all right this week. I'll be all right. He is intentionally trying to kill himself with food. So it's slow torture.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm trying to talk about a like, and I'm already saying why it's hard watch. But anyway, that's like one.
Yeah. I think that attention to detail.
It's all over the flat.
It's prevalent throughout the film, both in the surroundings and the characters themselves. Because when the young lad first visits Charlie in his home, Thomas, played by Ty Simpkins, when he first sees him, he looks at him like he's seen a mythological creature.
Moby
like
Dick.
It's a griffin. Yeah, exactly that, yeah.
Mm.
It's that analogy runs throughout the film, doesn't it? He's basically Moby Dick. He's a whale.
It's a double entendre. Oh, no, a double entendre.
Hello.
I think that's what it's called. It means it's the two meanings.
Yeah.
So throughout the film, he keeps referring to this essay to do with Moby Dick.
Mm.
And it's how he adores that essay. And it turns out it's his daughter's essay. But it's also because it's a, you could call fat person a whale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that those, like you say, the attention to detail and how it looks, how he's destroying himself, how when he's going on a mad binge, he's not looking for quality.
Mm-hmm.
He's not sitting there going, I'm going to make myself a mega sandwich with all the trimmings. He is putting whatever he can in his mouth as quickly as he can.
You see his side table?
Yeah.
It's a fridge.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Great details.
No, I'm with you on there. Yeah.
Sticky. Everything looks really sticky.
Mm.
Oh.
Sweaty. Sticky.
Another, like, some wonderfully horrendous scenes with Fraser flexing his acting skills. That turn he does when he shout cries, I need to know that I have done one thing right in my life. That made me cry, man. Oh, it made me blubber like a whale.
Yeah.
It was so like, oh my God, that was real.
You felt it, didn't you?
Well, it's great because the way the shot works is it starts on his side and it moves around his back and he has to make the effort as this huge guy to turn so you can see his face to like deliver the line.
Yeah.
So you have to watch him struggle and then that's why he delivers the line so perfectly.
Yeah.
Because the suit weighed, it actually did weigh a lot.
Yeah.
So he didn't let him say it head on. He actually has to turn in the shot and to meet the camera's gaze to get past the shot. And just the way he delivers the line, it's just like, oh man.
It's gut-wrenching, isn't it?
It is the worst.
Yeah, and I think in years to come, you know, classic films have their soundbite. So you hear a clip of a film and you know, oh, that's from this film.
That's the one.
Yeah, I think in years to come, that will be a line that's remembered because the impact of that line, like you feel for this guy, like, don't get me wrong, I'll be honest, watching this film, I did feel disgusted and I'll go through that in more detail when I get onto my dislikes. I did feel disgusted, but I had this profound sense of just empathy and sympathy. And I was like, this poor fucking guy, because he's a sweet dude. He's not like a nasty guy that's like lashing out at people. He's struggling to deal with his grief and trauma, and he's, instead of outwardly expressing his emotions, he's eating them in the confines of these small flat, and it's devastating.
I know that world, Lou, to a degree. I'll smoke my emotions, I'll drink and eat my emotions.
Yeah,
it happens, and not to that degree, but you could easily, I can be transparent about it. I can easily say, look, I have them issues.
Yeah,
if you consider them issues.
I think a lot of us do. And I think there's a fine line of being in control of your self-control and then completely losing it. It's like the breaking of a dam. As soon as that self-control is gone, you can go out and have a binge drink because of you having a particularly good time, a particularly bad time. You can smoke a load because of stress. But you know you're not going to do that every single day.
No.
That's the difference. That's when you lose that control, when you've lost to your addiction, to your obsession.
Day.
It's every day. It comes as natural as breathing or having a shower or tidying up.
Yeah, there's all different levels of addiction. You could be the healthiest, most good-looking human on earth, but you spend 9 out of 12 hours of your day on your phone doing TikTok, doing Snapchat, Instagram nonstop. That you couldn't handle a conversation or an interview and stuff. You just become a robot. But even though you'll live forever because you've looked after yourself, what type of existence would it be? You live forever like a robot.
Yeah. There's no substance. Looks great, but nothing below the surface, which is damaging, I think.
Mm.
And a problem that's more likely to happen more and more time goes on, unfortunately. I'll tailgate on that one as well, because one of my favourite things was the man himself, Brendan Fraser. Like you, I thought he was absolutely phenomenal in this. I found his performance fascinating and was genuinely shocked that he had these sorts of levels in his locker. He manages to portray a sweet soul that is completely absorbed by his addiction, and this sort of layered performance offers an eye-opening insight into people living with morbid obesity. And you touched on it earlier, we don't see people that large on our screens. Normally, no. I had a little thing, what people I could think of. I could think of Gilbert Grape's mum from What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
That was real, though.
Yeah.
She didn't have a fat suit on.
A lesser scale, Precious, which I still haven't seen, but I know you highly applaud that film. It's one I need to check out.
It's an excellent film.
But I think, these people aren't being shown on screen. And to see his performance, and it's a very honest depiction of it. It's not glamorized. It's not, you know, he's desperate for a bucket of fried chicken when that's the last thing he fucking needs.
Oh, God.
And he's given it just to keep him happy. And in the long term, it doesn't matter if you're happy to tuck into
He's an arsehole. You know that, don't you? He involves other people in his suicide. He has a sister-in-law nurse who yeah. comes to help him, but she can't also starve him. She wants to keep it. He makes her guilty, and she has to give him chicken and meatball subs.
I have a caveat to that. I think she is also slightly an enabler because she teases him with the food.
Chow.
Yeah. That's her, yeah.
Yeah.
Hong Chow plays Liz. Yeah, she does a great...
She's really good.
She's good in this as well, yeah. I'd say she's an enabler because she knows she's a healthcare professional. She knows she shouldn't be giving him that food, but she likes being able to... He offers the last connection to her brother, who Charlie, Brendan Fraser's character, was in a relationship with. So she likes having him there as a memory of her brother, but she doesn't help because she brings in the food. She brings in a bucket of chicken. She brings in meatball subs.
I suppose in her mind, the pizza delivery guy removes the possibility that she could stop it. So she might as well feed him because he'll get the pizza regardless, won't he?
Better the devil you know.
Why did she stop him choking? And why was he scared when he started choking?
Well, I think if you start to choke, really choke on something, I don't know anyone that would be chill. I think if you were choking and you're like... this is it. I don't think anyone would just be going, oh, looks like I'm going to die by choking today.
He wants to die.
He doesn't.
I thought he was going to like try and smile through the choke and he'd be like, let me die. And she's like, no, I'll save you. And she'd like punching him in the back. Oh, God.
I think he does subconsciously want to die, but I don't think he wants to admit that he does want to die.
It's hinted at that his boyfriend starved himself to death as well.
Well,
he did jump off a bridge.
Yeah, but...
but it's hinted at that he went the other way.
Through rejection from his family and a strict church, almost a cult church, he ended up, yeah, taking his own life after starving himself, punishing himself.
You're just so dangerous, man, to brainwash children from a young age. Look, you'll go to hell if you do this, if you're homosexual, if you do that. I see nothing good in it.
No. I mean, you only have to watch this film and see the direct result of a person that's being told how to be, being governed by a church, by a belief, by a faith, and how that ends for, what, 3-4 people?
Just because they fancy men. They jump off a bridge.
Because they're feeling subhuman by the idiotic people in charge. It's a madness.
It's a madness.
Got any more likes for me?
You mentioning Precious, it might have changed my third like, because I forgot, as much as I adore the film, I just couldn't think. I felt so ill, I was heaving so much watching this film. Don't ask me why I'm not weak stomached, it's just weird, I have a strange reaction to it.
I don't think you're alone, man. I've got a strong stomach with films, unless it's horror, and I struggled.
Yeah, well anyway, I put down, I think it is the best film ever made that focuses on obesity and makes you feel ill at the compulsion to comfort eat and be depressed to the point you want to die by implosion. Now, I think that's still accurate because Precious... she's not trying to kill herself by eating. She's a fat girl living in benefits community, horrible abusive mother, trying to raise a disabled child, etc. She's a victim of rape and everything. It's more about her breaking through and so living her life. This is more about dying.
There's a positive message at the end from what you've told me. Yeah.
So it is the best obesity, I eat myself to death film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Who could top it?
I don't know.
There ain't going to be a sequel.
I mean, off the top of my head, other than the two characters I mentioned, Gilbert Grape's mum and Precious, the film titled the same name, I can only think of Fat Bastard from Austin Powers, which is not a fair representation of either Scottish people or fat people because it's just an absolute mess.
Yeah.
But I really did, like you, I couldn't think of any other depictions.
No.
Or honest depictions, at least. Mm. And say what you want about the film, you having that sort of... really difficult reaction to it, really struggle to digest it, so to speak, to watch it. I think whatever you have to say, good or bad, it certainly is honest. It's impactful and it shines a light on the realism of it, I guess.
I think you can put yourself in, I certainly can put myself in his character's shoes to a degree where I have ate a whole pizza on my own before.
Oh, mate, so many times.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I'm talking about me.
What?
I've eaten bear pizzas.
Bear pizzas, yeah. So I think when I look at it and like, you know, playing through KFC and stuff and you're looking at it and you're like, oh man, it's so ugly.
And avoidable.
And avoidable, yes, of course. But obviously there's that whole area now. There's a sect of people that want to celebrate being overweight.
Okay.
And that, you know, big people are people too. You know, no one said you're not.
Yeah.
But there is a strain that your obesity puts on your family, your health, and obviously local health services, where everyone has to adapt to you and your compulsion.
Yeah.
And you want us to celebrate the fact that your heart might give out on a roller coaster.
And that's something, it's a question I've got later on, so I'll stunt you a little bit there, because you've made a point that I don't want to go into too deep, because I feel like we're going to go in very deep later on in this episode. But I completely agree with you.
Yes.
These groups of people are often praised or not treated with any disrespect. But if someone's addicted to cigarettes, alcohol, gambling, straight away they're painted with a negative mm-hmm. brush. And yeah. the question I'll get to later will touch on this more. But I struggle to understand what the difference is between being addicted to alcohol and cigarettes mm-hmm. and binge eating, because both are a strain on a family, both are a strain on the...
Dude, you could be addicted to sex. NHS. You could yeah. be addicted to painting. You just, yeah. I can't stop painting houses. Oh my God.
Yeah.
They are subcutaneous terrorists.
Okay. We'll get onto this in, I can tell it's gonna be an interesting chat. It's in the question section, so I'll brace myself.
Mm.
I've got one more. Like, have you got any more?
No. Nah.
All right, so basically what you said, just regurgitated, and the whale. The whale is that's a poor choice of words, isn't it? The Whale is a strong single setting film that perfectly showcases profoundly flawed characters dealing with complex emotions and relationships. I found myself both deeply sympathizing with and deeply judging each and every character within the small shared screen space. Now, the story is obviously focused on Charlie and his fight with obesity and obsession, and the fact that he's looking for a slow, laborious way out by eating himself to death. But you look at, there's only, what, 5-6 characters within this film?
Mm.
Each one of them are deeply troubled. And yeah. None of the characters are black and white. They've all got these really murky grey areas. And I think in a film where you are focused primarily on Charlie and what he's going through, I mean, the size of him on the screen with that restrictive mm-hmm. 4-3 ratio, like he's bigger than life. You have these little other characters that seem tiny in comparison, but their stories, their narratives are also huge. If you look at them independently.
Well, they're satellites to his son, aren't they? Because his gravitational pull is so strong.
Look at that. Excellent. Mm. Couldn't have put it better.
Revolving around.
Yeah.
Ice.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little pissed off with you, actually.
Yeah.
No, that's great. But if you look at his daughter, on the surface, she's a pissed off teenager because her dad's left her, and rightfully so. But the way she presents herself, the way she reacts, she's a problem child, no doubt about it. Hong Chao's character, Liz, we mentioned, she's there looking out for Charlie, but also she's kind of an enabler. She's kind of using him to not push past her own grief to do with her brother. Then you've got the young lad, Thomas, played by Ty Simpkins. He's there under the pretense of trying to help, but it's for selfish reasons because he thinks he's been a bit of a dickhead. And he has. So these are all highly flawed characters that are trying to find some sort of retribution or find some sort of end to their grief. And I think that melting pot, that menu of different characters, I think just works. And I really enjoyed it.
The double entendres.
Left, right.
The melting pot.
Regurgitate. Yeah.
Oh, I don't. Yeah. Oh.
You got any dislikes for me? I feel like you may have a few.
Oh, shit. I got loads.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't call them specifically dislikes about the film. One of them is, but I'll start with this one. It's put me off KFC and pizza.
Yeah.
And I heaved throughout the film, even though I am myself on the body mass index, morbidly obese.
I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah.
And I'm no medical professional.
Yeah.
I don't look at you and think this man is morbidly obese.
But your body mass index says I am.
Yeah, but body mass index don't know what it's talking about.
I'm 20 stone and 6'2".
Yeah, but you're stock central.
Beef stock.
Yeah. You're a chunky bit of hock ham. There's nothing. I'm not looking at you going, oh, fucking hell, he needs to shed some pounds.
I just fish you in look, for compliments, mate.
You look, well, I wouldn't dish it out unless I meant it, but you don't look morbidly obese. You don't look fat. So I'm dismissing it.
But is that why I'm heaving in the film?
I think you're heaving because he eats every bit of food like he's starving, and he's clearly not.
It's and horrible, man.
It is horrible. It's like watching a cement mixer move.
No, I know what it's like. So, you know, we recently spoke about how in Seven you don't see him kill anyone, and you know the fat guy got fed to death. So if you want to know what that fat guy went through, apart from the barbed wire around his feet and irons, just watch The Whale to get an idea of what it's like to eat yourself to death.
This is what actually happened.
Actually.
Yeah.
It is so grim. Yes, yeah, so it's put me off KFC and pizza. My partner cooked a pizza yesterday. I'd usually lap that dog up.
Yeah.
Cold, hot, I don't care how it is, give it to me. Mm.
Yeah.
Yum. I couldn't touch it.
No.
I couldn't touch it.
Yeah.
And when I was out the other day and I watched Oppenheimer, brother offered to get me KFC and I said, noi.
Can't touch noi. It.
I can't.
See, I'm there with you, but I can't have KFC because of my wheat intolerance.
Yes, of course.
So I was like, good. Other people going to look at KFC and be like, I can't have that now. And they join me in my non-KFC consumption because I can't eat it.
Yes.
I love KFC.
Yeah.
And I have a strong stomach too. Don't get me wrong. I made the mistake first time I watched this of snuggling down with a sandwich and... No. I did finish the sandwich because I don't like to waste and I was hungry, but it wasn't the most enjoyable experience I've ever had of eating a sandwich because you can't help but be disgusted when you see someone binge like that. And it's
made me feel very ill. I like mayonnaise and stuff. I tend to like a thin bit of mayonnaise in a sandwich, whatever sandwich it is. And I just couldn't touch it.
No, it certainly does that. It's like diversion. It makes you think like, I don't actually want to eat anything ever again. Unless it's green.
Celery.
Unless it's chopped up into small pieces. So I'm not got a over elaborate mouthful. I just want to nibble on celery now.
Mm-hmm.
And I get you. And again, I'll tailgate off what you said, but what I didn't like about it is kind of what the film sets out to do. And it is a hard watch. And like I said, I applaud the no holds barred approach. But The Whale is a 2-hour story of a man losing his life to obesity. And that fucking sucks.
Intentionally.
Yeah. And watching him struggling to operate, seeing how others are disgusted by him and observing his need to feed made for difficult viewing.
Mm.
It's a sad film about a man who lost his way and decided to give up. So all in all, harsh title, sad film, horrible moments.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go on my second like.
Dislike.
That was really well put. Yeah, sorry, dislike. So for me, it's adapted from a stage play, but it hasn't quite evolved fully into a film for me. The off-screen characters, like ergo pizza delivery boy, that's stage play 101. Because it sounds like he's on a stage behind a curtain, just behind a guy dressed as a willow tree.
Yeah.
The choreography between Mormon boy and brutal teenager is very dancey and unrealistic. The way... their conversation makes one of them jump up from a chair and move, and the other one follows and pursues, and then that one turns around and that one follows and pursues. Yeah. It's very staged.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of years in my teens going to theatres when I was into the old performing arts, and it's just a bit too stagey. Sometimes the script can lead that in terms of direction. I know it's a single setting, apart from his porch, but other than that, it's too stagey for me. I wanted it to be a film.
I think I tend to agree with you.
It's almost 2D head-on, isn't it?
And I think you look at the recent film, I think it's by Florian Zeller, sorry if I've got that wrong, The Father with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
That's adapted from a play. Mm-hmm. And that adaptation to screen, you can still tell its roots, its foundation was based on a play, but I think it does enough as a film to warrant its own merit.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to agree with you. I never thought of it until you brought it to my attention.
It's the entrances and exits of characters. It's very unnatural.
Yeah, you're right. You've got a character looking toward or facing the camera and someone talking behind them, and then they're reacting with their back to the person, and they turn around and almost swap positions. And you're right, it's very stage-like.
Very.
Yeah.
They can't evolve from it, and that's a shame. I would have preferred it if it didn't have that feel.
Yeah.
Mm.
I get you. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Third and final.
Here we go.
Big boy.
It's going to hit, innit?
Okay, so this is something that has bothered me. The fact that outside of the film, some people are politicising it and discrediting the film for not hiring an overweight homosexual man in real life to play the part of Charlie, that is. This ongoing nonsense, and we've had this conversation before, but you have to be the character in reality to play the character in fantasy. I've never understood it because it's called acting.
Yep.
And if you allow me...
I will allow.
Your Honour, I'll submit 2 articles of evidence to support my case. And after that, 2 points. I'll start with the articles. Time Magazine, December 9th, 2022. Daniel Franzese, played a funny character in Mean Girls, told People magazine he and other larger gay actors are generally overlooked for roles, even when they have the direct life experience. He said he was conflicted because he loves Fraser and wants him to have this moment, but the casting choice represents a wider issue. Okay, that's one article.
Can I just cut him real quick?
You can, but it would kill it. No, I'm joking.
Okay, well, newsflash. Mm. I don't know who this guy is, but I would say he's not as good as an actor as Brendan Fraser. So stand down.
Certainly if he's moaning about it and that's what he's being heard
stand
for.
Stand down, good sir.
Okay, Pink News, published April of 2019. This is so before the article regarding the whale. Franzese, who played gay character Damian Lee in the classic teen novel Mean Girls, told LGBT online publication he wasn't allowed to audition for straight roles after doing Mean Girls. I had become famous for playing one thing, but Hollywood, a very what have you done for me lately town, just didn't think my talent could go beyond that, he said. As soon as the movie was over, I kept meeting the gay clerk glass ceiling. They wouldn't let me audition for straight roles.
Objection, Your Honour.
Go ahead.
That's ridiculous. You can't have your cake and eat it.
Great choice of words.
Yeah.
Make your mind up, mate.
You can't moan and go, oh, it's not, there's a character on screen that's not represented by a person that's actually what that character is representing, and then go, oh, they won't let me play anything other than gay.
It is crazy.
That's madness, mate.
How can you say that?
You shouldn't.
But at point one, I will hit you with this, because for me, it is relatable, and this is not to be misconstrued or taken out of context, but that for me is like a convicted paedophile shouting injustices because he should have been given Kevin Bacon's role in The Woodsman, because he has direct life experience abusing kids and therefore can transfer that to the character's believability.
Mate, you shouldn't be put in a position to say that sentence, but is that ridiculous?
It is.
It's like, oh, we've got an actor who is not a paedophile. Mm. Great, fantastic. But it's not really a fair representation of the character. We need to unlock a nonce so he can be on the screen with a child. That is fucking
Jesus.
Ridiculous.
What does it stink of to you? What is the one word? Look, I've got it in my head, but I want to see what is it for you think that is all is? What does that boil down to?
It's a word that if you say it, you're pigeonholed into
bigger.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say jealousy. Oh, it stinks of jealousy.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
Because that just sounds like he wanted the role Fraser had because he thinks his direct life experience would have given us a better performance. He wants that role because of that reason, and that he's being marginalised because he's fat and homosexual. At the same time, he's moaning that he's not getting straight roles.
Yeah.
You've got to pick a lane, mate.
Exactly. Pick a lane. If you're going to put all your bets on one horse, you can only back that horse. You can't then go and back several horses because you've made such a clear standpoint. You said, it should be this way. I should be considered for this job because I am overweight and because I'm gay. It's an absolute tragedy that I have not been put in for this role. And then go, I only get chosen for jobs that are playing gay characters. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's pure nonsense. And I understand, and I'm completely there with you on that dislike. It makes no sense.
No.
You're one or the other.
And my point too, if a casting director seeks out someone by saying, you're obese and homosexual, please come and read for this role.
Oh, the uproar.
No, but let's say this Ferenc guy, say he read for it, but he didn't get the role. 5 years down the line, he'd say, I was disgusted that all they saw was my size and sexuality when there's so much more to me.
And that's a
free thing. You just, no one can win this argument.
If he was just in one lane of outrage, if he's like, oh, it's so annoying that I couldn't be considered for a role like this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that roles should be represented by the people that are being represented on screen. You can kind of get it. But the fact that he's gone too back and forth, you just lose all respect for him.
It's
not a valid argument.
It's jealousy. Look at Jonathan Groff from Mindhunter.
Yeah.
He's a homosexual guy in real life. Plays a straight guy in Mindhunter, plays it extremely well.
Yeah.
You know, I believe everything about him being attracted to a woman.
Exactly, yeah.
What's the expression? You can't tar everything with the same brush or something?
Yeah.
Like, you can't make out that the whale was made in any other fashion than to bring attention to that sort of struggle.
Exactly, and it does a fantastic job. That I think if they'd gone with that guy, the fact of the matter is I could be doing the guy a disservice. I don't know him, but I don't think he's not getting the job for any other reason that he's not good enough to handle it. It's as simple as that. I don't play for Chelsea, a team that I've supported all my life, because I am not a good footballer.
But Aronofsky waited 8-9 years to cast the film.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with who you are as a person.
It's what you can bring to the table.
Exactly that. And he saw it in a film that Fraser had done, a more unknown film. He saw the performance and thought, that's who I think I want for this film. It's nothing to do with your sexuality.
And guess what? Aronofsky got it right. And placed his bets on Brendan Fraser, and he won because Fraser was phenomenal in this.
Yep.
And I don't think anyone can dispute that.
No.
I mean, that conversation's got me a little triggered, but another thing I didn't like about the film is how triggering it was. It triggered a part of my past that I've moved on from and highlighted something I still struggle with today. As I mentioned earlier, I used to be a fat boy in my youth. And when I lost a lot of weight, I struggled with body dysmorphia. And I got a little addicted to losing weight, and I thought I needed to lose more, even though it was evident that I didn't. But wrapped up in the psychosis of it all, I thought I did need to lose more weight. And I know what it's like to be controlled by food and the effect that an obsession can have on your psyche. And, you know, that was quite triggering for me. And I think other people that struggle with their weight or weight loss, whether it's being overweight or being underweight, I think a film like this can be quite, like I say, triggering, can be quite damaging. And the other parts that bothered me was the noisy binge eating scenes. We share this dislike, and I hate noisy eaters. And yep. Seeing Brendan Fraser's character gorge himself made me feel physically sick.
Yeah.
And I really, really wish I didn't have my headphones in watching this. Did it twice.
It's too much.
Got a fan, Dyson fan, one of the best things I've ever bought.
Got a fan in me, mate.
Oh, you stop it. You. But the fan was on full blast. I wanted the headphones for full immersion. And I just regretted that decision because you heard every smacking of the lips, every munch, every crispy bit of chicken, every bit of chew of a pizza. It was just grim. And when he's completely lost control, when he's just eating jam out the jar, it was just brr.
No, he was putting blackcurrant jam on a bit of pizza.
Yeah. I don't mind a bit of pineapple.
It's just sickening, man.
Jam. Yeah. And like I say, I think this film has the potential to trigger some people. And, you know, if you are someone that could be triggered by that, if you've ever struggled with weight loss, weight gain, or one of the many ailments that come with food or weight, then maybe avoid this one, because I certainly did find it triggering in parts.
Took me, not even lying, 5 attempts to watch the movie. And I had to do it in bits. I started it 3 times due to unforeseen circumstances and extremely weak stomach, which is new for me. I struggled to watch this film. I'm very glad I did. I'll never watch it again.
No, it's too much. It's certainly one of those.
It's too much. Yeah. Suicide, but slow suicide,
yeah.
And involving people in your suicide, which is already such a difficult subject, but to do it via food, oh my God.
Yeah, it is just 2 hours of struggle, isn't it?
It's savage.
Yeah. My final dislike is the almost fat fatality.
The what?
Almost fat fatality.
Explain.
So I didn't like the thought of dying mid self-love session.
Oh.
Imagine someone finding you like that.
Did you say fap?
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't usually use that word.
Yeah.
Other ones I know.
Nearly fap fatality, man. Like, imagine someone finding you like that, and imagine that's how people remembered you.
How did he get? But how is he reaching his piece, his member?
Well, he knows where it is.
Yeah, but the muscles you would need to move that belly out of the way to get any purchase on that pickle.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily sure of the physical dynamics of it all, but he's certainly getting there because he's having a good old time. And then he nearly has a heart attack from it. And I just thought, that's the first thing you see in the film, by the way.
Within 1 minute.
And it lets you know what you're in for. No mm-hmm. holds barred. This is a man dealing with full-blown addiction to food. And this you're going to see mm-hmm. every nook and cranny of him. You're going to see him at the very lowest point. You're going to see him eat food like he hasn't eaten food for months. Like, it's a hard watch. And that, I just thought, God, that poor person that found a person like that, porn playing,
mm-hmm.
penis in hand,
Jesus,
dead. You'd be like, wow, that's ingrained into my memory forever now. Thank you very much.
Do you know what it reminded me of? The shock of that opening scene was when I was at school. I must have been 13, 12 years old or something, and I handed a science textbook, and on one of the pages was a gaping vagina with a baby's head coming out of it, and it was a real photo of a woman giving birth. And when you've never seen anything like that,
and all of a sudden
you see it, I was like, oh
yeah.
And when this film starts with an extremely obese man just tugging to porn and then having a heart attack within 60 seconds, you've seen porn on the screen, you've seen him chubbing off,
yeah,
in
good use of the word.
Double entendre, yeah. And
full of them,
yeah. And then almost has a heart attack, and then reads himself an essay on Moby Dick. This is all within a minute.
That his daughter wrote.
Oh.
That makes it worse, innit?
Oh, my. And she was in eighth grade when she wrote it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a nonce.
No,
it's just,
but
it's weird to think, look, close to climax, at the same time close to death, you think of an essay your daughter wrote. Like, because you'd still have Chubb. It wouldn't have quite gone down.
Well,
he'd have a semi.
The dick's not caught up with the heart. They're different departments.
They are.
So the heart's like going, oh, I'm fucking dying. And the dick's going, well, I'm nearly done here, mate. Give me a minute.
Oi.
Yeah.
Oi.
It's a horrible thought, and that is a dislike of mine. I probably thought about it too much, which says something more about me than the film, probably.
He didn't make it, so you didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Aronofsky knows what he's doing.
Aronofsky does know what he's doing. I've got some questions, and the first one's the big one that I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Society judges addicts of alcohol, cigarettes, sex, drugs, and gambling. However, we seem to be living in a time where obese people who are proud to be fat are being respected, applauded, and encouraged by others. I would argue an addiction to food is just as dangerous as any other of the addictions I have mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? And do you think it is damaging that we live in an almost pro-fat era?
I 100% agree. And all I would say is for the 0.05% that say they've got a thyroid problem, fine, come forward, show me your certification. Other than that, if you are just obese because you don't like exercise and you are overeating and you want to be on the front of the next Vogue magazine and be celebrated for being overweight, you are teaching dangerous lifestyle choices to children.
Exactly.
No different to me loving a smoke.
Exactly that.
Loving a smoke. I'm not saying I love a smoke. I love smoke. But I'm saying, why am I being victimized for having a cigarette?
It's that, isn't it? And I know society, if you see, and I'm not talking about someone who's overweight. I'm not talking about someone who's fat. I'm talking someone who are physically incapable of moving around because their weight is too big. They can't walk it from one room to another because they are that heavy. We live in a society where if you buy a packet of cigarettes or some alcohol, there's warnings plastered all over it about the damages it can do to your health.
Even the people serving you give you a dirty look.
Exactly.
I've had that.
You can be in a society where we're outside in a beer garden. Guess what? I like a smoke as well. We're outside in a beer garden having a smoke, having a drink.
Polite
away from everyone.
Though.
Yeah, we're so courteous of everyone else around us. We take ourselves away from people, especially if kids are involved. Mm-hmm. And people, the look that they give us, and they could be a really overweight person smashing two burgers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both are really damaging to your health. We both know the person smoking and the person gorging themselves on food. What we are doing isn't good for us. Part of being a human is the choice to do those things that are bad for us. What I can never wrap my head around is some people are villainized by it. And other people, you'll see a morbidly obese woman who's on Instagram saying how comfortable she is in her own skin. And people are applauding it. And I do have a bit of a problem with that. As someone who was fat, as someone who worked really hard to lose the weight, as someone that was obsessed with losing weight, as someone who's worked their whole adult life to keep that weight off. If I'm getting painted with a brush of villain because I smoke, then I think someone that entangled by addiction, whether it's food, drink, gambling, everyone should be painted in that same brush.
Yeah.
Not because, oh, you'd hurt them feelings. You hurt my fucking feelings if I'm having a cigarette after a stressful day.
Totally, yeah.
If I like to have a flutter on the horses, you're hurting my feelings because of my hard-earned money I'm putting on a horse to try and win some money. I enjoy doing it.
Hey, you throw a gamble out there, it's because you want to change your fortune.
Exactly, yeah.
You don't eat a burger because you want to change your ass.
No, you don't, unless you're trying to put on some timber. But yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page with that one. And yeah, I feel quite passionate about it, as you can maybe tell. Second question, do you think the whale should be shown to overweight youths to show them the dangers of the path that they are on?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, train spotting for drugs.
Yep.
Flight for alcohol.
Yeah.
Do it.
They should see it.
Yeah.
They should see it.
As long as they don't make them hungry.
Boy, if it makes you hungry, then you need to seek some
when
help.
He throws up in the bin.
Burp.
Because he's gone on a big, big binge this time where he doubles pizza. So when you double pizza, it's a classic. All us fats know about it.
Oh, I've doubled
it's where
many
you put
pizza.
A slice on top of a slice.
Oh, yeah, double-decker that bad boy.
Yeah, it's like a chicken McGangbang. You ever put a chicken sandwich inside a Big Mac?
Oh, gotcha.
Chicken McGangbang.
Mm.
Yeah, so he doubles up pizza and he puts jam on it and then he throws up in the bin. And then the Mormon lad, I call him Mormon because in the play I think he was supposed to be Mormon.
Okay.
But when he enters, Fraser's talking to him and he's got this lump of catsick on his tit.
Brr!
And I was heaving.
That is dirt. Catsick makes it so much worse.
I feel ill.
It's not actually catsick. It's just...
it just looks like catsick.
An accumulation of all the garb he's chucked in his gob.
Fuck.
Final question. Brendan Fraser gave a career best performance that was worthy of an Oscar. Which actor do you think has an award-winning performance in their locker just waiting to be discovered?
Barry Pepper.
Mate, shut the front door.
Not same.
That's my answer.
No, it ain't.
Yeah, B Peps. I'm a big fan.
Dr. Barry Peppers.
Yeah. B Peps, he's someone that he's sort of, I haven't seen him much in recently, but what the films I've seen him in, I'm like, this is an excellent actor. Why am I not seeing him in more shit?
Yeah.
And I think he's still waiting for that role.
Yeah, that little, the small role we had in True Grit, you could see how good he can be.
Oh, there's a film where he's actually the lead. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Three Burials of a name I can't remember. Something Estrada, I think. Apologies if I got that wrong. And in a lead performance, he was fantastic in that. And when I thought of this question, I was like, well, I can only think of B Peps. The Pepper.
It's like, oh, I'd go David Fulis. He's excellent actor.
Yeah.
Brilliant,
yeah.
British actor. He always gets supporting roles. He's rarely ever been the lead. But yeah, like Kingdom of Heaven, Harry Potter. I'd love to see him in a lead role.
I think both him and B Peps have got those levels. You can see him in their performances. You know they've got a lot about them, and it's just a shame they haven't really got it yet.
Matthew Fox. Is it Matthew Fox?
From Lost and Bone Tomahawk. He's got something about him.
He's like, he's sort of semi-alcoholic, smart-dressing guy in...
I just drunk pure sand.
Adam has coffee in from a cafetiere, and he went to the bottom of his cup.
Oh, mate.
And his face changed, and he had this like black sand dripping out of his lip and mouth, and his face looked terrible.
I looked like Brendan Fraser when he gorged on jam and everything else in his fridge second then. Yeah. Sorry about that.
I am
disturbing.
Actually losing weight because I watched that film. It's incredible.
Well, then that's a good film, right? Not saying you need to lose weight, but if it's making you make healthier choices, then that's got to be a good thing.
Oh, Jesus.
I think a lot of people should watch this film and learn from its warnings. Before I spat out sand, I think Matthew Fox.
He's cool.
Yeah, he's got something about him again. Yeah, he's really only seen him in sort of straight-laced roles.
Then I saw him in Bone
Tomahawk. Yeah. Again, if you're like sort of front and center of such an iconic TV series, it's hard to break away from that. So you're only ever going to see Jack from Lost. But I certainly agree. I think he could be in a lot of lot more things and deserves to be, like B Peps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you rate The Whale out of 10?
6.
Oh. I thought maybe more.
I love his performance. I love to what the film speaks to, and it's done. It is done well, but I can't escape the fact that it is, in essence, a stage play.
Okay.
And
yeah,
it's a hard watch. It's hard to watch someone eat themselves to death, and you sort of like have to watch people enable him. And it doesn't mean it's not a good film, but it's too stagey for me.
Yeah.
If you just say stage play,
I think
probably be a 9.
Yeah,
but like for me as a film, it's a 6.
I think based on everything you said, and you had such a strong adverse reaction to the film, as you said, it took you 3, 4, 5 attempts to watch it.
Almost Ralphed.
Yeah, which means sick, if anyone's wondering.
Well, Americans know what Ralphed is.
Oh, okay.
But
cool.
For the British, yeah, it's best we explain what Ralphed is.
Yeah, what I nearly Chunder. Did. Yeah, what I nearly did on drinking coffee granules just then. Yeah, I see why you would give it a 6. It is a hard watch. It's definitely not an entertaining watch. For me, as someone who doesn't like your more basic horror films,
paranormal horror slasher.
Yeah, your more traditional horror films. Mm. Not really a horror guy, but for me, I feel like The Whale is almost a horror because it shows you the dangers of what overeating can be. And as someone that doesn't like horrors, I appreciate films like this that make me feel horrified. So I'd go higher. I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
An 8?
Yeah. Because
I'm going to slap you silly,
Dad. I welcome it.
Some of the excellent films you've given.
Yeah,
what'd you give Interstellar, bro?
7.5. But for me,
that's an actual movie.
For me,
yeah.
Well, let me talk. I'll let you talk.
What?
Let me talk. I'll let you talk.
Mm.
Yeah. I think it's an 8 because I've watched it 3 times and every single time I'm fully captivated. I'm horrified. I'm disgusted at all the emotions I'm meant to feel. I deeply feel it. That performance from Brendan Fraser, the layers of all the other characters and stuff like that. Like, sorry. I think it's a film that everybody should see at least once.
Dude, you like it because it might help cull the land mammals in the world. That's why you like it.
We were doing so well not to just be downright controversial. There you go, we're at the end. Fuck it, take it. So that gives The Whale a total score of 14 out of 20.
Yeah.
If you like your films to be heavy, hefty and heart-wrenching, or if you have ever wanted to feel broken by a big boy Brendan Fraser in a bodysuit, then The Whale could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Precious and The Wrestler. Should we play a game? The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It's then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Okay, so a bunch of librarians, men, women, they, black, white, gay, doesn't matter as long as they're funny and watchable, but you deal with that. That's the cast and crew for the librarians. Four people. Let's say four. Two on the desk, two putting their books away. Essentially, they don't want their precious library to close due to high rent and missed payments. So they start selling marijuana in cut-out pages inside books to students, or just, you know, people come into libraries to get books, who then, when they return the book, they put money in it. That's to pay for the drugs. Then the book that they borrow next has the product in it, etc. That's the system. What starts out as getting enough money to stay afloat starts to boom into a bigger business, and it gets the attention of, you guessed it, part-time security guard Tug Wheelhouse. He's like getting a whiff of what's going on here, and he's part-time security. No one takes him seriously, kind of like a Dwight Schrute, I suppose. And but their weakest link in the operation, who is a customer, and it's their best customer, who is like a train-spotting enthusiast with Tourette's, and he smokes dope to keep the Tourette's at bay, and he's called Arful Crinkle Weather. So he might let shit go because he's got Tourette's. You've got Tug Wheelhouse, who's trying to see if there's any truth to the fact that this librarians in this library have got the biggest marijuana drug selling ring in the county.
So I've got Tug Wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Who's the lead purchaser of product?
These names can change, but I had it down as Arthur Crinkle Weather.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Crinkle Rizzler and All Weathers, Arthur, because he's in the trains.
He wants it all days.
He smokes dope because he's got Tourette's and it puts it at ease. But what it means is if this Tug Wheelhouse managed to stop the drug operation, or no, not stop it, but hinder it, or try and tug, and then this guy comes off the dope, he might let shit go because he's got Tourette's. Oh yeah, they've been selling drugs here for years. Mm. I knew it.
Okay.
That's all I got. I had to go something so light after watching The Whale, man.
Yeah, you've got to, man, because that film's is a hefty, heavy load, isn't it?
Too much.
Yeah. I like that. I do like that. There's a lot of casting to go on there, so I'm still not quite there. If you've got anything else for me, you've done a great job describing it. I'm just buying for more time, really.
Just it's been really hard lately, man.
Okay, let's not go there.
And like,
no, keep it light.
Keep it light.
Keep it airy.
Yeah, I'll keep it light. Essentially, I opened the fridge lately, and I don't want to eat anything in it.
That's not light. Well, I guess it's light if you're not eating.
It's so hard now to look at baked beans or cheese or Jesus. Yeah. Who did I say? Dwight Schrute? Rainn Wilson.
Yeah.
You could cast him as a Tug. You don't have to. It's just, or he could be one of the librarians. He's one of them sort of actors that deserves a bit more screen time. Wait, why don't you cast Daniel Firenze?
No, because I think he's a shit actor.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Okay. So this is obviously a straight up comedy.
You could use the whole of Saturday Night Live for this film.
Yeah, I'm basically bringing back some of the old boys
of course,
the Anchorman era and nice. Stuff like that.
Nice.
Okay, I think I've got it. It is a fantastic What the Plot. It's nice to have a lighter one because we tend to delve in darkness when we come to doing What the Plots. So we have a bunch of librarians who are a bunch of four that are all funny and watchable. They are working for a struggling library, and in an attempt to keep their beloved library open, they start selling drugs, marijuana, to keep it afloat, basically. Mm-hmm. They need to make money to keep their library open. They're not getting government funding, so it's down to them. Mm-hmm. They see an opportunity they might work on a campus or something like that, or near a campus where, you know what, I can get hold of some weed.
They got to connect.
We can sell weed here. So they decide to put drugs in the library books. When people want to buy drugs, they go and rent out a library book. Mm. They look like they're returning switcheroo. The money, but in the book is money. So it's a simple transaction, but mm-hmm. both being hidden by books. What starts as a small venture grows. People catch wind of it, start more and more people are getting in, and the general public are going, why the fuck is, in the world of the internet and Google, why the fuck is this library so popular? A sort of Jobs-worthy Dwight Schrute type known as Tug Wheelhouse, he's a security guard that works on the premises or nearby, sniffs something.
Could be like a court of buildings, and the library is one of them.
He senses something dodgy's going on.
Well, what you said, in the world of phones.
Yeah.
What is with all these people going in this library?
And I think there, and he's sort of, he's nemesis, so to speak, is the lead purchaser of product, who is an autistic, or not autistic, he has Tourette's.
Tourette's,
He has Tourette's, and his name is Arthur Crinkleweather. And the film is basically these four good-intentioned librarians trying to keep their beloved library open, a jobby security guard sniffing out that there's potential wrongdoing, and what their lead buyer is Tourette-suffering Arthur Crinkleweather, who also wants to keep this going because it helps ease Tourette's and he just loves smoking weed. So as I say, this is a straight-up comedy that speaks of Anchorman, that speaks of Semi-Pro, old school Pineapple Express, and as the four librarians, Will Ferrell, Craig T. Robinson, Michael Cera, and Steve Carell.
Oh, no women?
No, I should probably, but no, because we're going back to the early noughties, and they were probably guilty of not having too many female leads in their films. So buying into that narrative, not because I'm a bigot, not because I dislike women, I love women, it's just this film, it's all boys.
I thought you would have said Tina Fey, Amy Pillier, Will Ferrell.
I was thinking of that, and I was like, you know what, I want to get the band back together. So our four librarians, Will Ferrell, Craig T. Robinson, Michael Cera, and Steve Carell. I can't look past anyone. I can't see anyone playing Tug Wheelhouse other than Rainn Wilson. He has to be playing very much a Dwight Schrute role, but maybe a bit violent, maybe a bit more edgier, like really dark, like he fucking finds students and kicks the shit out of them or something. Like
Paul's Will Ferrell's toenails
we go real dark. That's fine by me. And his nemesis, the lead purchaser of product, is the Tourette suffering Arthur Crinkleweather, and I go Paul Rudd.
Perfect.
Just I can imagine.
Yes.
Like he nearly got in as one of the four librarians, but I just think he's brilliant.
He'd be because he's the character that could let it all slip.
Yeah.
And slide.
Yeah. And I just love Paul Rudd in everything that he does. And directing the film, I would have Judd Apatow.
Yes, of course.
You have with that cast. Yeah, how can you not include him? And for the film, I struggled here, man. I did. So I've gone with High Intellect.
Some people love to read. Other people love to smoke weed.
I may have drank 10 beers and had 2 steaks, but guys, hear me out. I got an idea.
Well, hang on a minute. Last time you had an idea, I got a really severe case of diaper rash.
To help their library survive, they had to help people get high.
Why is everybody suddenly going to the library when Google exists?
Guys, I love it. Wilbur, I love what you guys are doing with selling all the dope and stuff. I really get high off of your dope. Asshole, I really, really love what you're doing. But that fucking Tug Wheelhouse, man, he trained 16 to Waterloo. He knows that something's going wrong here.
From Judd Apatow, the director of Knocked Up, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and basically the entirety of Seth Rogen's career, starring Will Ferrell, Craig T. Robinson, Michael Cera, Steve Carell, Rainn Wilson, and Paul Rudd. High Intellect. Coming soon.